We have four sections in chapter 5. Originally it was written as six sections, but the last two sections, the fifth section was, if you haven't done any, it's okay, I'll just let me read them to you. And then you can start again on chapter 6. I'll do them. First one is called, Karma Yoga is equal to, but easier than, renouncing work. 1 to 6. Karma Yoga is equal to, but easier than, renouncing work. Renouncing work is karma sannyas. So Karma Yoga is equal to karma sannyas, but it's easier. Okay. Section 2 is from 7 to 12. And that is called How to Perform Nishkama Karma Yoga. How to Perform Nishkama Karma Yoga. Then, from 13 to 16, this is called Relationship Between Soul, Super Soul, and Nature. Relationship between soul, super soul, and nature. If you remember, that was the primary elements of Sambandha Jnana, right? Ishvara, Jiva, and Prakriti. So this will be an important section, at least philosophically. In English, this is called etiology. I will write it on the board. We have a marker? Eraser, marker? Throw those things. You in here? Okay. Etiology means the study of causation. Huh? Yeah, I'm going to write it down. It's an English word. Anyway, here's the word. This is how the Americans spell it. The British spell it, I think, a little bit differently. Oh yeah, the British, I think, spell it like this. Yeah, anyway. Etiology. Study of causation. Or the science of causation. So this section could also be called Vaishnav etiology. That would be like a rather academic term. You know, if you were giving a course in a university, they would be impressed with that term. You know. Today, students, we're going to study Vaishnav etiology from the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You know. He knows what he's talking about, this guy, right? So, okay, we don't need this now. Where's the top? Yes. So it's the same, you know, these three circles. Ishvara, Jiva, and Prakriti. What is their relationship? Okay. That's the third section. That's 13 to 16. Short but philosophical section. Yeah, 13 to 16. The last section is the longest, from 17 to 29, to the end. And that's, hopefully, we can finish chapter 5 today. Okay, let us chant verse number 7. Title. Oh, of course. Liberation through focusing one's consciousness on the Supreme. Liberation by focusing one's consciousness on the Supreme. So in this section, the Nishkam Karma Yogi achieves liberation. He's free. Text 7. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriya sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvan apina lipyati. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Are these windows open here? We should open those windows also. Open them so we get some breeze. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that all jivas are affectionate to householders who are properly engaged in nishkam karma yoga and who do not take karma sannyas. All jivas are affectionate to householders who are properly engaged in nishkam karma yoga and who do not take karma sannyas. So here we have, so yoga yukto means he's engaged in yoga. He's linked up practicing yoga. And he is Vishuddhatma, Vijitatma, and Jitendriya. These are three terms or adjectives describing the Yoga Yukta. And they are given in terms of in a sequence of superiority of stages, in order of superiority. The first one is more advanced. He's Vishuddhatma. Means that he has controlled his intelligence. He has purified intelligence. Yeah? The second one is Vijitatma. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's not exactly in order, but the second one. Oh, yeah, that's right. It is in order. Vijitatma means one who has controlled his mind. Okay. And Jitendriya means one who has conquered his senses. And Prabhupada mentioned this in the class also. He said, Vishuddhatma means the pure self. When we think, I'm the enjoyer, then the Atma is covered with dirty things. I am the enjoyer. But when we think in terms of yoga yukto, everything belongs to Krishna, then we are Vishuddhatma. Pure self. So yoga yukto means the person who realizes that everything is God's property. Prabhupada mentions in the commentary. He's talking about the person who's self-controlled. Right? He says, because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. As we remember in the previous chapter, it was mentioned Yadrchaya Labasantushtam Dvandvatita Vimatsa. So person who is engaged in this yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga, then he is free from envy. Right? He's above the dualities. So therefore nobody, you know, people are not afraid of him. He's not a competitor for sense gratification for the other human beings. Therefore, they feel that they can, that this person's dear to them. The only reason why there may be some people may have some enemies is because they see them as a threat to their sense gratification. But the devotee is not chasing after sense gratification, and he's free from envy, so therefore he can become dear to everyone. Dhira dhira jana priyo priyakaro nirmatsaro pujito. He's dear to everybody, even the non-devotees, the dhira and adhira, because he's not envious of anyone. And so people are not envious of him also. Let's keep reading from that. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure, he is in pure consciousness. Because he is in pure consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. He's explaining the verse very clearly. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, or the Supreme, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics related to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything just not offered to Krishna. He doesn't wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses, therefore, cannot be offensive to anyone. And so, people like him. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive to others in battle? Wasn't he also Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually, as the soul cannot be slain. So, spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield, Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Okay. So Krishna is now describing the Nishkam Karma Yogi. He works in devotion. He controls his intelligence, mind, and senses. And he's dear to all, therefore he's dear to all living entities. And he's never entangled. Now what else does he say about this yogi? Naiva kinchit karo miti yukto manyeta tatvavit pasyan shrinvan sprashan jighran ashnan gachan swapan swasan pralapan visrajan grinan unmishan nimishan api Indriya Indriya Teshu Vartanta Idhidharaya. A person in divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. So, yukta here means, again, the Nishkam Karma Yogi, as was described in the previous verse. Yoga yukta. So, naiva kinchit karomiti. He never thinks, I am the doer. Naiva kinchit. Never. He never thinks, kartaham iti manyate. And he is tattvavit. Right? Because he knows that the Lord is the proprietor of everything, even of his actions, his own body, that he is part and parcel of the Supreme. So therefore, when he sees and hears and touches and smells and eats, he knows that it's just the material senses in contact with the sense objects. Notice that these first five are the Gyanendriya, and the rest of them are Karmendriya. Krishna mentions the Gyanendriya first. So even while the Nishkam Karma Yogi, he's active, his senses are working, but he's Tattvabhit, and he realizes the self is separate from the body. I used to call this the periscope shloka. You know, like a submarine, it has its periscope. And the submarine is under the water, and it up comes this periscope, and it looks around like this. So it's like the soul is inside the submarine, and the eyes are like the periscope, and the eyes are just looking back and forth. But actually, the person never thinks that I'm the submarine. His eyes are going, and it's just like a mechanical device. The man is sitting inside of the submarine, and he's, you know, got this thing. He's going like this, and on the top of the water, there's the thing looking around, you know, like this. So the realized Nishkam Karma Yogi, he feels like this while he's inside of the body. He feels like he's kind of inside a yantra or some machine, and that he's just looking out from within it. Like this. So, does such a person's work bring any reactions? The next verse answers that. Brahman yadhaya karmani sangam chakva karotiya lipyate na sapapena padma patram ibambhasa. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. Prabhupada writes here, Brahmani means in Krishna consciousness. This is one of the places where Prabhupada differs in his opinion from Baladeva Vidyabhushan, because Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that this is the word Brahmani means in Pradhan, or Pradhan. Pradhan is the subtle conglomerate of the material energy in its potential state. And we discussed this on the first day, I think, a little bit. Or maybe the second day. Yeah. So why does he say that it's Pradhan? Because in verse 330, Krishna said, Sarva Karmani, Mayi Sarvani Karmani, that you give everything to me. So therefore, now he would not say, now you give everything to the Supreme. He would say, Mayi. If he wanted to say that, he would just say, Mayi, because he already said that. Right? That's his one of his arguments. And then he says, he says that, and so he already said that you should give everything to me, so he wouldn't go backwards and say, okay, now give it to Brahman, to Paramatma. And he already said himself, because if he wanted to say himself, he would have just said, Mayi. So that was his argument.
Krishna has said before this verse, anybody said, you should offer everything to me.
330.
Earlier, long back.
Not in this chapter. Yeah, in text 330. So, he's basically would be saying the same thing. So that's, anyway, that's Baladeva Vidyabhushan. And everything as Pradhan. And that he's separate from Pradhan. Therefore, Sangam Tyakva Korotiya. He gives up his attachment to the material energy, the Pradhan. And in this way, he is unaffected when he lives and works in the world, just like the lotus flower. That's his vision of this verse. And the other acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, they're saying that the person gives up attachment to the fruit of his work, which he offers to the Supreme, Brahmani. And in this way, he's not affected by sin, just like the lotus flower or the lotus leaf in the water. You have lotus leaves in the water right out here, right? So if you splash water on the leaf, the water just rolls up in like a ball, and then it rolls off the leaf. Because the leaf has some kind of, you know, like a covering, like wax or something on it, which is a natural wax the Lord puts on this leaf. So it's in the water, but it never gets wet. It's transcendental. So even Jesus said that the devotee should live in the world, but not of the world. Right? So that is a similar principle here. So, this verse is a continuation of text 8, where it was mentioned tattvavit. But it's a step lower, 1% step lower than text 8. Because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that even if there's some false ego in the person, described in text 10, or the tattvavit, let's say. Okay? Even if there's still some false ego, he still thinks that I'm this body. Then still there's no reaction as long as he's detached from the fruits. So in text 8 and 9, it said that he realized he's not this body, he's tattvavit. But in text 10, it describes that he's just offering the fruits to the Lord. So even if he's not completely on the level of tattvavit, knowing he's not the body, if he hasn't realized he's not the body, still, if he offers the fruits of his work to the Lord, he's still unaffected by sin. That's his point. Prabhupada actually quotes the verse which is mentioned by Baladev in his commentary. He said, the Lord said in Gita 3:30, Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya, resign all works unto me. The conclusion is that a person without Krishna consciousness acts according to the concept of the material body and senses. But a person in Krishna consciousness acts according to the knowledge that the body is the property of Krishna, and should therefore be engaged in his service. You also notice that Prabhupada's commentary, he mentions about Pradhan. Right? He says, the material world is a sum total of manifestation of three modes, technically called Pradhan. Vedaksim sarvam hietat brahma and tasmat etat brahmanama rupam anam chajayate. And in the Gita, mama yoni mahat brahma indicate that everything in the material world is a manifestation of Brahman. And although the effects are differently manifested, they are non-different from the cause. So the effects of the Supreme are the property. One of the effects, the Visheshana called property. And although they're manifested from the Supreme, they're different than the Supreme. And even though they're different, they're still non-different because they're a manifestation of the Supreme. So anyway, it's interesting to see how all of that happens. For those who are philosophical, they would appreciate this point. Now, text 11. Kayena manasa bhudya kevaler indriyarapi yogena karma kurvanti usangam chakbatma shudhaye. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, and intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. So the nishkam karma yogi is considered to be in the mode of goodness, and the main motive for such a person is purification. Atma shudhaye. And what's special about the nishkam karma yogi? The jnana yogi and the ashtanga yogi, they're inactive and they're not engaged in work. So here we see kevaler indriyer api, that he even uses his senses. It's just very strange, different from the other yogis. Right? Okay, he uses his mind and intelligence. That is understood. But he even uses his senses. That's what makes him unique. Because the other yogis, they don't use their senses. They just control completely the senses from the sense objects. But this yogi, he can engage his senses. Why? Because he's using the sense objects for the pleasure of Bhagavan, or whatever his conception is of the Supreme. Especially if he's Bhagavad Arpi Nishkam Karma Yogi, then he can offer so many things to the Lord. So that we can see that he's similar to us, the bhakti yogis, in that regard. Because we also use our senses, and we can engage the sense objects in the service of the Lord. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on the word kevala, meaning that sometimes he only uses his senses, and he spaces out in his mind. He doesn't think about the Lord. Does that sound familiar? Right? He says that although one's mind may be distracted while making the offerings of oblations like Indraya Svaha, he mentions, still his senses are kevala, acting for purification of the Atma, for the sake of purifying the mind. So he still makes purification, even if he's just using only his senses without the mind and intelligence. It's like that for us also, because we sometimes forget about Krishna while we're performing our devotional service, isn't it? But we still get some purification benefit from it. But we get a lot more if we're thinking about Krishna. That's the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, the person is thinking with love about the Supreme.
How action performed without knowledge can purify a person?
How knowledge without action?
No, how action without knowledge?
Well, I think the person generally has knowledge, but sometimes he doesn't, he may forget. Vishnu says that although his mind may be temporarily distracted while he's making Indraya Swaha, and we're making our, you know, other offerings to Kunja Bihari, Radhe Radhe Swaha, you know, but we may, the pujari on the altar may just, you know, he may start dreaming about, you know, train, getting on the train to Chopati or something. He's ringing the bell, you know.
Right?
Or whatever, you know. He can be thinking of so many things. But he still gets the benefit of some seva, he's doing something. But it's not as much. But there's benefit there. Even later we'll see, hopefully, if we're allowed to stay here and continue, that in the Patram Pushpam Palam Shloka, in 9th chapter, the commentators mentioned that even the devotee may be angry or disturbed in his mind, that the Lord will still accept the offering because he's performing his duty even though he's disturbed. So there's like a shadow or reflection of bhakti there, even though in his mind he may be thinking about his god brother who just shouted at him, that guy, you know, oh, I should have said this to him, he's not going to get away with that. No, he's not making the offering. But the Lord doesn't take an offense to that because he knows it's temporary, and that he appreciates that the devotee's still going on the altar and doing his, even though his mind is disturbed. Because he's a person. God is a person. So, you know, the different commentators have a different, very interesting, you know, connotations about the different words. Like here, Prabhupada follows Baladeva Dibhushan, who says the word kevala means fully purified. And he says that Krishna is citing the behavior of sadhus as evidence in this verse. And he's elaborating further on verse 10. Baladev Vidyabhushan mentions. Right? Yoginaha. The sadhus. They carry out work with the body, mind, and senses without any false identification with the body. Because they're Atma Shuddhaye. Right. Okay. Text 12. Again, we see the word yukta. Right? In 11, we see yogina. So practically every verse, he's describing this person as in the first verse in 7. Yoga yukto shuddhatma. Right? Vijitatma jitanya. Yukta karma phalam chakva shantim apnoti naishtakim ayukta karma karena phale sapto nibanyate. Now here's an interesting thing. The first part of the verse is yukta and the second is ayukta. Right? So again, yukta means the nishkam karma yogi and it's describing his that he is detached and that causes his liberation. Right, he gives up his attachment to what? Karma phala. And he attains peace and naishtiki. A very firm footing. Unflinching. Firm, steady situation in the Supreme. But the ayukta means the sakam karmis. Right? Who do everything kama karena. For sense enjoyment. And phale sakto. Right? They're attached. So they nibadyate, they become bound. So Krishna is, the main point in this verse is that attachment and detachment is the cause of liberation or bondage. And this is a summary of the last five verses from 7. This is a summary of this section from 7 to 12. You'll see in the purport, Prabhupada said, use the word attached 3 times. Because that's the main point of the verse. Prabhupada says, the former is attached to Krishna, where the latter is attached to the phala, karma phala. Right? two kinds of people, one who's yogi and the other one in bodily consciousness. The former is attached to Krishna and the latter is attached to the results of his activities. The person who's attached to the Lord works for him only as a liberated person. So that's the main point. And that's the end of that section. So this is a description of how the Nishkam Karma yogi actually does his yoga. And his, you know, the main characteristics of this person. Right? He uses all of his senses. Right? He's tattvavid. He's focused on the Supreme. He's working for Atmashuddhaya, for self-purification. He's unattached to the fruits of his work. These are the things. He offers everything to the Supreme. And it's like a lotus. So, you know, if you were to draw a picture, then you would draw, in this section, a picture of the lotus in the water. Right? How it's, the lotus is, you know, pankaja. It's born from the mud. So we're also born from the mud of pradhan, of the material world. And when we become yogis, then we're like beautiful, like lotus flowers. And even though we're coming out of the material world, the muck, or the mud of the material world, we become beautiful. Then we offer ourselves to Bhagavan, to Radha Kunj Bihari. Like every day you're picking the lotus flower for Kunja Bihari, then you can meditate on this verse. So these are some of the characteristics. Also, this yogi is controlled the mind and senses, and is pure intelligence. Okay, now here comes the philosophy part. That was the practical part. Now we're going to get even more philosophical. Okay. Small section, but deep. 13 to, what is it, to 15. Oh, 16. Yeah, 13 to 16.
Guru, I have a small clarification. We read this Naiva Kinchi Karomi Iti, Yukto Manye, Pashyanshu. So, this kind of perception, is it something that one should endeavor to perceive?
This kind of perception is?
To always remember that I am not the body.
Yeah.
I am not the senses.
Right.
Neither am I the mind or intelligence or whatever. I am different from all this aloof, you know, a being situated within this body like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is a bhakti yogi also supposed to endeavor to be conscious of it or remember if things are in excessive time?
Yes, bhakti yogi should also be aware of these things. And he naturally does become aware of them by practicing bhakti, which is the most powerful of all the yoga systems. So he can practice like this, thinking, I'm not the body. I mean, that's why Prabhupada spoke so much on this topic. So it is supposed to be, for bhakti yogis, they're automatically meant to understand and realize this.
Probably I feel in bhakti yoga, there's a switch of identity, you know. Like earlier, you would identify very much with the body. Now, you have switched over to identity of trying to understand that you're a servant of everyone, God is a master. So being absorbed in that new given identity, probably we are not thinking of the body so much, you know. Otherwise, we don't make a conscious effort of understanding that the activity of eating is done by the mouth and the tongue and I'm aloof from it, you know.
But it's, yeah, it seems that it's good to remind ourselves still of these things. Because otherwise, because the modes of nature are very strong, and even though we're performing the most powerful yoga, still we become bewildered and deluded, and again we identify with the body again and again. So it's good to remind ourselves of this point. This point will come up again, because the sadhaka has to use his intelligence, and that's what keeps him fixed from going back to the sense objects. As long as one is a sadhaka, he still has to, he has to depend on knowledge. We'll get to that. That's coming in this chapter. He's not talking about it. He just compared the detached symptom of the yogi who's yukta and as opposed to someone who's not yukta. And that other person is bound because he's attached to the fruits. He just makes a comparison.
Going on. Sakam karma was left behind in 3.10 to 13.
He can still do that. He's not. You can see the main topic is Nishkam Karma Yogi, and so he's pointing out the difference. What makes him different from someone who's Sakam? It's not having the whole discussion about Sakam Karma or Kanda Karma Kando or Karma Yoga. Okay, now let's go on. Text 13.
Sarva Karmani Manasa Sanyasyaste Sukham Vashi Navadvare Pure Dehi Naivam Kurvam Nakarayan.
When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, as described in the last 5 verses, he resides happily, where? In the city of 9 gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. So the question is, where does such a person reside? Navadvare pure dehi. In the Navadvare pura, the 9-gated city. Here the word dehi means jiva who has attained knowledge, as described in Naiva Kinchit Karomiti. He's in the body, but he's not bewildered thinking that he's the body. So he's in a body, but free from false ego. And Sarva Karmani, all his activities, Manasa, Sannyas. So he renounces within his mind. He's one of these internal sannyasis. Yeah? Two kinds, external and internal. So Manasa, with the mind. Internally, he's renounced the fruits of all of his activities. But he continues to work with the body. But internally, he's renounced. That's the meaning. And Prabhupada gave a lecture in New York City, 1966, and he said, he has decided. Dritti comes from the mind. He has decided. Thus, his sukha is under his own control, his happiness. He's independent of the happiness and the stress of the material world. As a rich man is sitting in a room and everything is going on, so a Krishna conscious man is sitting in the body but is aloof from the body. So what has he decided? Well, I guess I didn't write down the whole lecture, but it seems that he's decided to dedicate all of his activities to the Supreme. So dritti, that gives him dritti, determination, or like this. Yeah. And that gives him energy to perform the activity. When a person has decided something, then the dritti in the mind activates the pranas of the body. Because the mind is connected with the pranas. It affects the pranas of the body. So when there's some determination of the mind, the pranas get activated and give power to the body and the senses to perform that activity. So once you decide, now I'll do this, then you get the power to do it. But if you're not sure, then you won't have that shakti, because the pranas won't kick in from the determination in the mind. This is also described later on in, where is it? Anyway, it's in the last six chapters somewhere. I forget where dritti is mentioned. Yeah, it's mentioned in another place. I'm bringing it up here because it was Prabhupada mentioned in his lecture. So Prabhupada says that his happiness is under his control. Sukham vashi. Right? He's independent of the happiness from and distress from the material world. He's controlling his own happiness. Because he's getting it from within. Manasa. Right? He's renounced everything. So now we see Nayava Kurvan. He doesn't work. Or he doesn't do anything. It doesn't mean that he's lazy, that he's not working. But it means that he realizes that he's not the doer. It doesn't mean he's just, you know, sleeping all day. Okay. Sometimes, you know, they call yogis like fatalists. They say that about us too. And we say, yes, everything is up to the supreme will of providence, and we can't control anything, so therefore we just relax, and everything is up to Bhagavan. Right? And the jiva has no role to play. Naiva kurva, he doesn't do anything. Nakarayan, and he doesn't cause someone else to do anything. Yeah, okay. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, while engaging others in work, he does not make them act. Why? Because he has no purpose to fulfill. He has no hidden personal agenda or any selfish motivation. So therefore, although he's engaging someone in work, but he doesn't cause them to work because of his own selfish desires. It's the same principle as the first statement, Naiva Kurvan. He doesn't work. He's working, but why is it said that he doesn't work? Because he's not attached to the fruits. So the same principle you applied to the second thing, Nakarayan. He's not causing others to work because he's not engaging them for his own sense gratification. In other words, he remains unconcerned by their actions. So he's living happily in the city of nine gates. And no one thinks that, you know, because I live in the city, I am the city. So similarly, he knows I'm living in the body, and I'm not this body. He endeavors and he works, but he knows ultimately that success is in the hands of the Supreme. It depends on powers beyond my control, higher authorities, whatever it may be. If he's Bhagavad Arpita, then he knows it's Bhagavan. Success ultimately depends on powers beyond him. Thus, he offers the results of his activities to the Supreme, to that higher power. There was one Catholic monk or cardinal. He said that when we work, we should work as if everything is dependent on us. But when we pray, we should pray knowing everything is dependent on God. So we fully endeavor, But we realize that ultimately, real success is dependent on the higher powers, the Supreme. Okay, next verse.
Nakatritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma phalasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate.
The embodied spirit, master of his body, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature.
So, Baladeva Vidyabhushan mentions there's three kinds of doers.
So you can write this down for your future understanding. One is called the Swatantra Karta, the independent doer. He works alone, independently. Then the second one is Prayoja Karta. He works under somebody else. He works under the third one, which is called Prayojahi Karta. Prayojahi Karta. That third one inspires someone else to work. He makes someone else work. And that he makes the number two one work. And the number two one is inspired by the number three worker. You see? So the two and three are intimately connected. They're always as a team. But that's why the first one is called Swatantra Karta, because he's not dependent. He's not working under anyone, and he's not causing anyone else to work. So Swatantra, Prayoja, and Prayojahi. So here we see that there's three nas in the verse. Na, na, na. Nahi, nahi, nahi. No, 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 no. This person doesn't create activities, induce others to act, or he's not creating the fruits. So, okay, we said that in the last verse too. He realizes that he's not the doer, he's detached. And here it says that he doesn't create his activities, induce others to act, or create the fruits. He can't control the fruits or the results of the activity. Also, he realizes that's the Supreme, right? So then, if he's not controlling all these things, then what controls those things? Or who? Swabhavas tu pravartate. It is the swabhava, his nature, his own nature, which is actually acting and working. That's the answer. It's his swabhava. Let us read the commentary. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. See, the temporary body. Some causing some activities and actions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. Right? He's detached.
So he should get out of the water by becoming a devotee. So then one might say, okay, the soul's not the doer. I understand. Good. And it's the prakriti, his nature. It's the nature, like your eyes are blinking, you can't control it, and sometimes you belch, or you pass air. Sometimes you fall asleep, even though you're trying to stay awake. Yes, this happens sometimes. You know? Sometimes you eat more than you wanted to eat. Sometimes you look at a young lady, although you didn't want to look. Right? This is causing, the swabhava, the prakriti is causing us to act in different ways. Even if the person realizes he's not the body, these things may still go on. You know. So, therefore, it's the prakriti which is doing everything, causing us to act. We're being tossed to and fro on the ocean of material nature, just like little pieces of straw. Sometimes we come together in little family, and sometimes we break apart. Oh, my friend. He goes. Right? We're not in control of these things. Right? It's the swabhava, it's the material ocean, the samsara, which is carrying us and tossing us. But someone might question that, but the prakriti is inert. It's not a conscious being. It's insentient. So someone must be behind that prakriti. Someone up there. He's the one who is responsible for this whole mess. All the problems here. The one who's hiding behind the prakriti. It's the Wizard of Oz. The one behind that with the crystal globe, yes. Right? It's that Bhagavan. I knew he's the troublemaker, causing all these wars and pestilence and disease and fights and between all different kinds of people. So there's three. There's only three choices. You have either the jiva, the prakriti, or Ishwara. So now, it is said that it's swabhava stu pravartate, that it's the prakriti or the swabhava of the jiva, which is acting. So one may try to look behind the swabhava, the prakriti, and look for that person who's controlling, who's the guneshwar, who's the parameshwar, who's controlling that whole thing. You don't see him. He's got his crystal ball. He's behind the curtain. When you open the curtain, then you have to bow down to him, right? But sometimes the curtain is closed. Maya jamane kachanam agya hukshajam avyayam. Nalakshase muda drusha. Natya natya dharovi. That's what Kunti says here. Yeah. Everyone's covered by the curtain of Maya. They can't see Bhagavan. But some people may use their intelligence philosophically, except there's the Ishwara. So he's the one. He's the one who is responsible. And we hear that a lot of times people say that. Right? They blame God for the evils of this world. I'm sure you've heard people say that, right? Well, if I was God, I wouldn't do it like that. Right? He's made such a mess of everything. Look at this world, it's a crazy house. So many problems. Right? But now Krishna speaks the next verse. Narati kasachim papam nachayva sukritam hibuhu agenin avritam gyanatena muyanti jantava. It is not the Supreme Lord who assumes anyone's sinful or pious activities, you rascal. It is the embodied beings who are bewildered because of ajnana, which covers their knowledge. Ajnana, avratam jnana. So the ajnana, right, which is covering, that is the actual cause of the living entity's bewilderment. And therefore, he is placed under property, and therefore he's desiring so many material things. And when he desires these material things, he tries to get them by any means, performing vikarma activities. Then he gets a reaction from the prakriti. Ah, what was that? Performs some evil activity, and out from the sky comes this arm with a hammer. It's like, wow, okay, I'll be good. So you get a reaction, you know, if you perform sinful activities. So that is, okay, so the living entity, but why does he perform those sinful activities? And why is he desiring so many false things? Ajnana, right? That covers his knowledge, somehow or other. So there's a combination there, prakriti and the jiva. Because ignorance is like part of prakriti, right? So in connection with the jiva is the sentient being, and the prakriti is just reacting to the jiva. And ultimately, Ishvara is controlling both of them. So, you know, it's like, now we're going to have some fun. You know, it's like, red, black. Let's start with black. So, jiva, prakriti, Ishvara. So it's hard to pin this down. Is study of etiology has been going on for hundreds of years, and different munis, rishis, or philosophers have been trying to understand, you know, what is the cause of everything in this world? What is the super cause? The causal factor which makes things move and work in this world. Of course, the gross material scientists, they don't see Maya Javani Kachanam. Murhadrish, they can't see. Nalakshasi. So these jivas, like scientists, they look only towards the prakriti. Right? They see that the prakriti is the material energy is the cause of everything. And even we have the Saddarshans, we have a philosophy that the atom is the cause of everything, right? And some other persons who believe in God, but they don't like Him very much, they're looking at Him. You know, that He's the cause of all their suffering. Of course, the prakriti doesn't glance anywhere. Right? Because it's inert, insentient. And well, yeah, that's true. But we're talking about the energy. Then the Bhagavan, he's looking at the jiva, that, you know, hey, you guy, you're the one that wanted to enjoy separately from me. So I put you here to enjoy the prakriti. So don't blame me. Okay, I'm the Ishvara, but you know, but you're also a little Ishvara. And I give you some independence, so you can stay there and enjoy the prakriti, if you like. So the first verse said that the jiva is not the doer. Okay, he's not there. That it's the swabhav, the prakriti. Okay, the prakriti is the doer. But the prakriti is controlled by Ishvara. It's insentient. But in the other verse, the Lord said that I'm not, don't blame me for all this stuff, right? So we cross him out, and we have her, but it's not her fault because she's just taking orders from Bhagavan, right? And reciprocating with the jiva according to the plan of the Lord. and she's inert, right? At least, so we can cross them up. But where do we get? Nothing. It's like you keep going around in circles. Except philosophers have been like squeezing their brains for hundreds of years to try to figure out, you know, which one is it? And some philosophers stress Ishwara, some stress the jiva, and some stress the property, depending on their school of thought. But it's like, you know, you can go around ad infinitum with this. So I'll give you some example. Let's try to bring it down from a philosophical platform.
Практический пример.
Okay, слушай меня, пожалуйста. Please listen. There's a story of the man who has a boy, young boy, maybe 4 years old, 3 or 4 years old, something like this. The man, he goes to the gymnasium, the health spa. He's working like this. So he goes into, you know, all the men are working out, lifting weights, running on the machines, you know, doing these things. So he comes up there, his little boy's just in the background. So he's put on his uniform, and then he comes up to these big barbells, big heavy weights that men lift, you know. Goes like. So then he sees his son. His son's also got some barbell over there. And he's like imitating all the men. Because all the men are lifting these things, you know, and the little boy thinks, yeah, I want to do that too. That looks nice. Like fun. So his son, the little boy comes over to the barbell and he starts going like that. So then his father sneaks up behind and goes like this. The boy doesn't see it. And he lifts it. And the boy goes... you know. His son's having fun, you know. So the question is, who is actually lifting the barbell? The father or the son? Okay, now you have three choices. The father, the son, or the Holy Ghost. No, or the hands of the father. Okay? Okay, so which one is it? Is it the hands, the father, or the son? Hands. Yeah, because the hands are the things actually touching the barbell. That's a real practical, you know, like a materialist would say, there's the hands. And then different kinds of philosophers would say the father. Some would say the son. What do you think? Huh? The desire of the son and the hands together. Not him? No. Huh?
All three.
Yeah, but then it's like, but we already said that none of them said that they're the doer. And now we're saying all three of them are the doer.
Only when they're combined, they're doer.
Huh?
Only when these three are combined in one, they're doer.
Okay, let's read. What is Prabhupada's opinion? A living entity is by superior nature full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is anu, or atomic. Because he is the living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord, the Father. And so, when the living entity is bewildered in his desires by ignorance, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires. But the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with the circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. The Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, and therefore he, the Supersoul, can understand the desires of the individual soul as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. The Lord fulfills his desires as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not therefore omnipotent in fulfilling his desires. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute, independent living entities. However, when one desires Krishna and takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain him and be eternally happy. So again, we can see that Prabhupada is mentioning that the Lord can fulfill and does fulfill the desire of the living entity. So the Lord, the man proposes and God disposes. Without the child desiring to play and pick up the barbell, the father would have never come over to pick it up. So there's some play, some role the jiva's playing, the son's playing. But again, if the son was there alone in the gymnasium, he couldn't have picked it up alone without the father. And of course, the father, if he had no hands, he couldn't have picked up the barbell. So the Lord is fulfilling the living entity's desires because he's inside of his heart. And the Lord is neutral. He's just facilitating the living entity's sojourn in the material world. Right? And the Lord is also independent. He has his own enjoyment and so forth. But he has his agents and his instruments, the material nature, the demigods, like this. And through those agents, he acts fulfilling the desires of the living entity. And in his partial manifestation as a supersoul, he senses the desires of the living entity in the heart, just like someone smells the aroma of a flower. Because the supersoul is close to the jiva, therefore the supersoul can smell and understand, let us say, the desire of the jiva. So then he says, okay, you want that? Alright. So his duty, as like a father, he wants to please the son. And he arranges through the material energy. So anyway, it's like, you're right, it's like all three of them working together. But the Lord is neutral. That's the point. And the jiva is the one who's hankering to enjoy. Right? So the jiva starts the whole thing off by his desires, which are influenced by ignorance. But he wants to be in ignorance. So the Lord puts him in ignorance, and then the living entity continues to desire. And then the Lord neutrally acts as a facilitator, only to fulfill the desires of the jiva. The Lord has no his own, you know, agenda, or his own selfish desires to fulfill. We already said, Name Partasti Kartavyam, that there's nothing for me to do, he said. Right. So the jiva starts the process, and then it's like dominoes. You push over the first one, then the second one, the third one, and then they all fall down in a process like this. So the desire of the jiva is the actual thing that's starting the process. But sometimes in the Shastras it is said that the jiva is not the doer. That is to you know, make him humble, that he can't do anything without God's help. But at the same time, he's responsible for his own actions. So therefore, in this verse, the Lord says, "Na dati kasichit papam ajaiva sukritam vihum." Yeah. So the Lord is not accepting the sins, papa. Here the word vibhu means the Lord. In the previous verse, the word prabhu indicates the jiva. And in this verse, vibhu is the Lord.
And the wrong decision of the jiva comes from the previous life's conditioning.
What's that?
Wrong desires? The jiva possesses. They are imprinted actually. They are coming from the previous life.
Yes, of course. There's some scars. The vashanas are there. Because ultimately the jiva is pure. And he just desires to enjoy. But because he's influenced, encased in the subtle body is affected by the gunas. And those gunas, the pure desire to enjoy is being filtered through the gunas in the subtle body and coming out that I want to be a king, I want a beautiful wife, I want to be wealthy, or I want to perform sinful activities, like that. And in this way, the jiva is trying to enjoy. The core of the jiva is that he wants to enjoy. But it's being filtered through his encasement of the subtle body, ego. First thing is the false ego, then the intelligence and the mind.
Arjuna says, anichchan api varshneya. Even unwillingly, even if he doesn't want to, he's supposed to engage in simple activities.
Right.
So then how is the jiva's desire the root
again? Well, that's like a pious jiva that he may not want to perform, but his samskaras, his vashanas are very strong. His gunas or passion and ignorance are there. So he hasn't performed enough purificatory acts to bring him up high enough from the modes, and his yoga is not strong enough, so his ability of the jiva to control the body, the mind and the senses is not manifested. He's not yoga yukta. So although he may know that this is wrong, and anichan, you know, he doesn't want, but still he's being forced by the gunas because he's still not above them. So the first point in any yoga is to rise above the modes of nature and to practice mind control. Because the mind is, you know, catching a lot of the modes of material nature and then dictating to the senses. The mind is the center of the senses. So, yeah, these things can go on like that. He may know it's not good, but he's forced. So that means he has to do yoga so that he can develop the strength to follow what he knows is right. Like the Christians say that the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. So that's anichan, you know. The soul is willing to follow God, but the flesh or the body is being forced by the kama, rajaguna samudbhava. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has written some commentary here, and then we'll read Prabhupada's also. The Lord neither binds nor liberates anyone. Rather, it is only ignorance and knowledge which bind and liberates respectively, according to the quality of prakriti. The tendency to enjoy or to initiate action is the cause of bondage. Similarly, detachment and peace, etc., are liberating. These are qualities of property. Right? Both the tendency to enjoy and detachment and peace is which mode?
Mode
of goodness. Right. These are also qualities of property. These qualities of mode of goodness help to liberate. And the ones from Rajan and Tamas bind one. These are qualities of property. The Lord is only partial responsible for the instigation of actions, because due to His being the Super Soul, all the qualities of property become manifest. Because He is the Ishwara of the Guna, He's Guneshwara. Or He's the Lord of the property, actually. So He's only partially responsible, because from Him, all of those gunas are manifesting. Thus, there's no possibility that imperfections of partiality or cruelty exist in Him. So you can't blame everything on God. He's just facilitating the journey of the jiva in the material world. I believe it was Baladeva Vibhushan wrote that he becomes enlightened by clearly understanding the interrelationships of guna, atma, and paramatma. This knowledge removes ignorance. Then one takes shelter of the Super Soul and attains liberation. So the Nishkam Karma Yogi becomes enlightened by clearly understanding these interrelationships. Guna, Atma, and Paramatma. This knowledge removes ignorance. So then one takes shelter of the Super Soul and he becomes liberated. Prabhupada writes, even though a person may be in full knowledge that he is not this body, but he is transcendental to the body, he still may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the Super Soul. Okay. Now we'll go to the next verse. So that ends that section called etiology, or the, what was it? Relationship between soul, super soul, and property. Huh?
Next verse was
16. 16, that's the end, yeah.
Including 16?
Huh?
Including 16 is the third.
Including 16, that's the third section.